It's 2603.
All right, this is the 999C ordinance. We're going to have some fun with this one, I can tell. So this is one, 999C has been in our code for probably at least 30 years at this point. There were 17 items that had to be considered as part of a subdivision. And a couple years ago, at this point I can't remember the date, but or the year, there was a concern at planning and zoning and also council that what does consider mean? You know, you can say, well, I considered it and I disregarded it and moved on. And so at that point, there was an effort to redo 999C and make it more, have more teeth to it, I guess I would say, and place the burden on a developer when they're standing in front of you all at the podium to say, okay, these are the 17 items or whatever the number is. This is how we satisfied them in our design of this subdivision. Puts the burden on the applicant to show, all right, here's number one, here's how we did it. Here's number two, here's how we did it. Now, they don't have to stand up there and say it. They can submit it in the record, but you at least have to show it and how we addressed it, not just that we considered it, you know, because we would see in the written reports, yeah, or, you know, we considered how this impacts the forest, period. Yeah, right, you know, so that was sort of the genesis for that change previously. Candidly, that got watered down at the last minute. The more directive language in it was taken out. And so I want to run through this because there's some misunderstanding of what's in the code now versus the changes and what the changes are. And there could be criticism on the changes and even in what's in code now, but I don't want people to think that this is all brand new because it's not. The main thing is, as I said, it puts the burden on an applicant to show, to demonstrate how the preliminary plan is consistent with the code of Sussex County, which they have to do anyway, and the comprehensive land use plan, which is new words, which they should have to do anyway, and most good presenters do, or developers, and that the following criteria are satisfied in the manner in which each one is satisfied. And so this is going to take not too long, but I want to do it. The first one is the proposed subdivision is integrated into existing terrain and surrounding landscape. That's untouched. That's been in there for decades. The second one, that all resources and resource buffers are protected in accordance with Chapter 99 and 115 herein. That's unchanged. That was updated because that refers to resources and resource buffers, which we took a lot of time to improve and protect in code changes a while back. That the next one is that the cultural landscape, including scenic views and cultural and historic features, are identified and protected as appropriate in the preliminary plat. That one partially was moved up from an existing one that was deleted that said that open space and scenic views are preserved. We deleted that part about open space because we got requirements for open space elsewhere in the code already. There was no need to restate it in 999C. An existing one that's got a lot of attention in the written comments is that the supply of potable water to future residents of the proposed subdivision is safe and adequate for their use. Again, that's been in the code for forever. We can change it, we can take it out, we can refer to state standards if we want to, but again, for context, that's something that's been in there and has not changed. The same thing with the means and method of sewage disposal are adequately addressed for the proposed subdivision. The one thing I will say about keeping these in is that, you know, when Mr. Horner and his group present applications, or Mr. Hutt and some of the other engineers we see, they all touch upon this, but we also know that sometimes people stand up here and they don't say whether we're on wells or we're on central water or what kind of septic, whether it's a mound system, what type of septic it is, central sewer, who's providing it, when it's coming, whatever. So, you know, we all know the requirements, but this says you got to show us how you're doing it as part of your, you know, the record you're making. The next one is that all lots be configured to be completely contained completely outside of all wetlands and that the proposed subdivision will not pollute surface water or groundwater. The part about being configured to be outside of all wetlands, that's in our clustered standards now. And I will tell you that that one, along with others in this ordinance and also in the open space ordinance, county council in conversations with staff said, why should we have superior design for just cluster subdivisions? Why shouldn't all of our subdivisions in Sussex County have a superior design? You're almost saying, all right, well, we're good with superior design here. We're like, all right, it's fine, so-so over here, you know? So that was the reasoning behind that, to pull those cluster subdivisions, superior design standards up into the requirements for all subdivisions. The next one was a change just to add the recent modifications we did to Chapter 90 about erosion and sedimentation control measures and identifications. I'm not going to read this whole next one because it's long, but it's about groundwater levels. That's existing and unchanged. That area property values will not be adversely affected. That's been in there since day one. We took out one, and I want folks to understand the why of this, that said that any active farmland and tree farming adjacent to the proposed subdivision is adequately preserved through the design and construction of the proposed subdivision. The reason that was taken out was not because it's not important, but because that's going to be addressed in the forest preservation ordinance that you are going to see probably next. You know, so again, it's one of those places we don't need to duplicate that here if it's going to be in another part of the code. The next one is that objectional features, including but not limited to utility infrastructure, parking areas, loading zones, and outdoor storage areas, be screened from view of neighboring properties and roadways. That's a design requirement that was added in. The next one is also important. Currently in the code, it says that the applicant has notified the local school district where the proposed subdivision will be located. Now, there was a lot of comment in the information that was submitted, and I'm paraphrasing, that doesn't go far enough, that we should also get a reply from the school that should be part of the record and acted on. And I don't disagree with that. The problem that we see is that the school districts don't respond. We see some from certain school districts, but it's mainly one or maybe two of them. And the issue with that is if we say we have to consider the response and we've got districts that do not respond, then everybody's stuck. We're essentially held up. I mean, maybe there's a middle ground, you know, that you have to give them a certain amount of time or whatever to respond, you know, within the letter that would come out from TAC or something. But that was not included, not because it's not important, but because it just doesn't happen from the school districts, which surprises me, but that's the truth of the matter.
That creates a problem, I imagine, for anybody who's an applicant.
Right. Or just no response, and if you don't get a response, then you know, then there's an issue. Well, your record's not complete, or we don't have that information from the district, and we don't have the authority to compel them to respond. You know,
I get that part of it too, but then what happens to the people that really do respond, and then we can't consider that?
No, if that's in the record, 100% that can be considered because it's in the record.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying that if it's submitted
that
they
can't.
We shouldn't. It's just that.
Okay.
We're not holding things up because they haven't. If they do submit it, 100% that's in the record and can be considered. So that public buildings and community facilities will not be adversely affected. Again, that's a standard one. The next one, I might ask Jamie to explain a little bit. We have in here from the most recent update about whether the subdivision is in a transportation improvement district or the service level remains a certain level. There was concerns that created issues with DLDOT, frankly, and they wanted language in here that would close that loophole. So, Jamie, if you want to explain that.
Correct, I can speak to that. So, council updated this section of code in December 2024 to add the section. So, the green text is the amendment that clarifies what was already put in code. So, when this was put in code, Delaware Department of Transportation did not participate in the 2024 ordinance. We've made them aware of this ordinance as well, and we've been discussing this ordinance with them. The confusion is that the intent was to increase the quality of the information before the Planning and Zoning Commission. The question then arose with the engineering community in their conversations with DLDOT that what happens in a scenario where you have a subdivision and DLDOT says that the applicant is permitted to take part in the area-wide study fee. So they pay a sum of money and they don't do a specific site-specific analysis, they just pay a sum of money. What happens when this standard applies, and this is the highest standard, and applicants and DLDOT are saying that all you have to do is pay the area-wide study fee? Well, the conversation is that yes, you have to meet the highest standard. You must give the commission some data, but we wanted to clarify that the analysis that's being requested by the commission and being required to be submitted is not necessarily a full TIS. TIS is a very large, complex document. So we wanted to add specific transportation terminology, and the correct word is segment analysis. It's an analysis of what's going on in the road immediately or the street immediately adjacent to the development or the intersection adjacent to the development, not a TIS that goes 3-4 intersections out. So we wanted to clarify the scope of this, but there are cases where this could be a higher standard than what DLDOT requires. And the area-wide study fee example is the example. So.
And so this language is designed to mitigate that issue, and DelDOT signed off on this language?
Correct, yes. Well, actually, I think when this gets to County Council, we'll invite DelDOT to be part of the public hearings. So they are aware of this.
Thank you, Jamie. The next one rolling along was language about safe and efficient vehicular and pedestrian movement with interconnectivity where appropriate. We added in compliance with Section 9917D because that gives the commission discretion. Like, for example, if you have interconnectivity with farmland that's in ag preservation, you don't want to run a stub street to that. And 17D also is in this ordinance that talks about issues we've had with county engineering about making sure those stub streets actually go to the property line, that there's cross-access easements so that they can be connected from the other side at some point as well, and temporary construction easements. And then, again, pulled from the cluster subdivision requirements, that sidewalks are required on at least one side of all street, subject to Planning and Zoning Commission approval. The thought on that is that we should require them, but give flexibility to the commission, because there might be situations in larger lots or more rural developments where you don't want sidewalks, and nobody wants to pay for them, and nobody's going to use them. No lot shall have direct access to any state-maintained roads. That's out of the cluster subdivision, and so that's been in existence for some time. And then the next, number 17 and 18, again, just talk about the design process for how a preliminary site plan is developed. And it, I don't want to say it's word for word, but if it's not, it's close, was pulled right from Section 115.25, the cluster subdivision requirements. You know, and to highlight it is, you know, you have, just like somebody today, if they're doing a cluster subdivision, they have the burden of showing that when we designed it, we looked at lands that are to be preserved first, including wetlands, wooded areas, waterways, water bodies, natural drainage areas, and other features that are important and should be met, you know, like tree lines, scenic views, historic buildings, et cetera. Then after you do that, second, developed land should be identified with the most appropriate locations for development chosen to minimize impact on the features mapped in the one I just described. Then roads and trails are identified third, where you put in the roads that'll connect all the lots, and then lot lines are located fourth. That's what we have now in cluster subdivisions, and you all, most of you all in the newer ones, you will see when folks come up on a cluster subdivision now, that's either in their written materials or they're describing that exercise that we went through. Again, the process being that we want superior design for all subdivisions, not just clusters. And then, as I mentioned, street layout 9917, that's the one that just says we want interconnectivity, and it shall be fully engineered to be compatible with the topography of the adjacent tract, because we've seen situations where people build up elevation so that it'll never be interconnected, you know, and vice versa, and that it's stubbed out 10 feet from the property line, so you can't actually interconnect at some point. So this addresses that. And then the last part of it is just deleting the superior design requirements from 115.25 because now they're moved into 99.9C. Whew, that was a lot, but there was a lot to go through. And there's a lot of moving parts on this, and this is one that attracts a lot of attention, so I wanted to kind of go through that history.
All right, thank you very much for that. Anybody want to speak? No pressure if you really don't.
We were about to gavel you. You were about
you
a
almost
second
got
away
bell.
From being gaveled to the next one.
Steve Sinclair, Millsboro, Delaware. And Jamie, if you could call up our PowerPoint. And am I going to be able to use that to?
Hopefully.
Okay.
Can I just ask a quick question on that, on the PowerPoint? This may be for Mr. Pica. So, because I just want to make sure, the one that you supplied today, does that replace the one that was in the docket or no? And I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I just I don't want to use two.
They're actually very, very similar, but I think the one that I gave you could be our official.
Okay, all right. That's just wanted to make sure for future reference that we're working off the right one. Okay, sorry to interrupt. But
as Dr. Pica said, I'm a board member of the Sussex Preservation Coalition and a former state forester in Vermont. I've testified before this group as well as the county council previously on perimeter buffers, on 99C, on open space, and now again today. I feel a little bit like a relief pitcher that's been waiting until the bottom of the ninth inning to finally get up here to be able to say something. First off, Sussex Preservation Coalition has always felt that 99.9 is a really important element to the county codes as it relates to coming up with criteria that all developments have to go through in submission of their plot plans. And we appreciate that the planning and zoning and the council has looked at these and recognized that the working group identified this as a significant need to move forward on. First of all, we'd like to recognize the fact that the opening statement changed to include demonstrate and satisfy versus the previous wording that was incorporated that was really kind of vague. So now really the onus is on the developer that they have to demonstrate and or satisfy that the 18 criteria that are put forward in 99.9 are being met. What did I do, Jamie? Maybe I'll just have you do it. Would you be willing to do that?
Not allowed.
Yeah. So the first thing we want to talk about is related to, so the what we're going to present today are some questions over some of the existing language. It's still, we feel, perhaps a little vague and inconsistent, as well as looking at some actual changes as well. And the first one we want to look at is under under criteria number one that Vince talked about that has not changed, but talking about that the subdivision is integrated in the existing terrain and surrounding landscape. And I guess our question to that is, what does constitute terrain and landscape? Are we talking about topography, so elevational changes? Are we talking about vegetative cover? What is being implied there? I guess our suggestion would be, instead of saying can include that, but also perhaps say is incorporated into the existing flume of future land use map. Under item two, the question remains that why was floodplains removed from the language? Will it be addressed in somewhere else in the plat approval process? We all recognize how important wetlands are in our landscape and the need to preserve and try to direct growth and development away from those. So the question that SPC had is, why were they removed? Jamie, next one, please. The next element, once again, is a question with the existing language where it talks about protected as appropriate. So we're not quite sure how is that going to be satisfied or demonstrated by the applicant. What is going to be required in that? And is perhaps some other language be better put in there? Also want to mention that some of the text that was removed from number three, particularly the one relating to forest assessment, we are going to address that future on in a future criteria. Next one, please. Element number four and five deal with portable water and sewage disposal. And we just want to reiterate that it's our understanding that the county has a technical advisory committee that works with the county engineer in reviewing these proposals and making recommendations to planning and zoning and to the county council in terms of whether they meet these criteria. So our question is, why not actually insert that in the language? That with that these have been met as approved by the Technical Advisory Committee. And this would hold true for both water supply and sewage disposal. So we think that it would be good to actually sort of codify the role and responsibility of that technical review committee and have them identified in the ordinances themselves so that they continue to confirm that the conditions have been met. Next slide. This is the same thing that relating to erosion and sediment control and groundwater levels. Once again, the feeling that if the code actually identifies that role and responsibility of the Technical Advisory Committee, then it is codified. You'll also see in several of these, and Dr. Pica was going to bring this up with his testimony as well, we were wondering if there would be any value to inserting, where appropriate, where these things are also identified in other areas of the county code chapter and articles. So if this refers back to something in chapter 115, perhaps having that in this element here would make that clear that those two are interrelated. Next. This is one where we're actually are proposing a word change, and if you look at it currently the way we read it, it's just talking about affecting improved visibility and screening from view of neighboring properties and roadways. And our suggestion is that we add the word from view of interior and neighboring properties. So let's say that there's a propane tank in a development, a propane tank field, and it's got a fence around it. So it's right near the property line. So this is saying, well, we're going to require the developer to screen that for adjacent property owners. What about the homeowners whose lots look down at that as well? Wouldn't we want to require the developer to actually screen it from the existing residents as well as neighboring properties? And here's an opportunity to do that by just adding interior and neighboring properties.
Guess maybe they figure that would be the cheaper lot when you're buying it.
Next. This is the next several criteria. We're proposing a new language dealing with school districts, public buildings and facilities, and transportation. We believe that it's critical for the county to use 99.9 to address capacity issues regarding infrastructure. It was one of the goals of the Sussex Working Group, and except for transportation, Willie was never addressed fully. And we think this is an opportunity to do that. And the way we're suggesting is that there would be an opening statement that would be applied to both 11, 12, and 13, provides assurances that the area be served by adequate existing and planned infrastructure for new, additional, and upgrades of existing public facilities, including roads, schools, sewers, and emergency services that are necessary to prevent development from exceeding the existing carrying capacity. Next slide, Jamie.
Just for the last one, and just for a point so everybody's aware of it, on the one I'm looking at, and I'm just pointing this out.
That sewage, we remove sewage from
it. And added
our,
roads. Yeah. I was going to say, that says roads and this one doesn't. So
Yeah.
It does. I guess, and you changed it. All right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure we're all consistent.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for picking that up. I appreciate that. Okay. Next.
Yeah. Okay.
So with this new language for each of those, it would have that introductory statement, and then for for school districts, we're saying that the school district must certify that it is adequate capacity. I certainly understand Mr. Robertson mentioning the fact that schools perhaps aren't being timely in responding to that, but perhaps if it now is a requirement in county code, that would carry a little more weight, and they would be more responsive. And it's if not, then perhaps it's a second phone call with to them.
It's just not happening with some of the districts.
And honestly,
and they followed
follow up.
Follow up
with them. It's it's surprising. You know, you would think that they would respond, but
not always. One
I'm
of the districts is usually very
how to
good.
How deal with that because it's just not working right now.
Can I just add one thing, which is right now they're informed, they're notified. This actually gives them a little bit more clout. They're going to certify. Right? It's not just, well, we've received your
notification. I hear what you're saying. I just am
we
still...
We actually have a role. Give them a role
in
the process.
Well, I think we've already given them a role. We're asking for their feedback,
because
and we're not getting it.
I explained the letter.
There's one district that is always good about responding, but there's several that never do.
So I can assist just a little bit on the process. So the Delaware Code requires that any major subdivision, the school district is notified. So we send notifications to the school district. Last year, the department saw three responses to, maybe four, to large-scale applications, and that was it.
Well, yeah. What's the notice say when you all send it out? Just paraphrase.
We summarized, this is a major subdivision proposed, there's a public hearing being held on this application for this many units. You can see, and then we link to the application details and say, this many units in this location, and then we share with them the link to the land use docket, the same we do with this public. So.
Anybody comment from
I was going to, so for, I think the past year, I've been, when I am processing applications that are coming in, when TAC is sent out, I mean, when it's just coming in, I'm sending notice to them. We don't necessarily have a public hearing date at that time, but the number of units, the site plan, the applications all provided to, with the description, the short title, to the school district. And there is only one school district that I have ever seen respond.
Yep.
Everything else goes.
And believe me, I'm all about our school districts.
The planner sometimes generally also may follow up from that once we have a public hearing date and they have the land use docket, but the planner sometimes follows up again prior to the public hearing.
What's their usual response on that? Because I mean, I know even though we're saying there's X amount of housing going in, you know, at the end of the day, I know they're worried about numbers. Students.
I think they're being very honest with us. I mean, sometimes they've said, we're at capacity, period.
Yeah.
Or other times they've said, we're reaching that point.
Right.
And sometimes it varies. I will say this.
Yeah.
More recently, it's been along those lines. And this is only from the one that responds.
Right.
Keep in mind, because, again, most of them don't. It was really, like, nebulous. It was like, thank you for the information. You know,
we can
handle whatever we have to handle.
Yeah,
I'm paraphrasing.
We'll deal with it, basically.
Yeah, right.
I feel like, you know, public education in that way is kind of like that. It seems like they can't really plan ahead. It's almost like it's an afterthought, and we'll just make it work. We'll bring in a mobile office. We'll do what we can. But the other thing is, you know, the next step that we have is Board of Education. That serves the whole state, not necessarily Sussex County.
This is a conversation I could go down a way different path because bothers me for our school system. But we won't go there.
Right.
I just can't, you know, that we don't get responses, particularly with all of the conversation about impacts on schools and the development that's occurring in Sussex County, that we don't get more responses. And so back to the point of this. I think we're all open to, you know, how to handle this best, but to require certification that we may never get, because based on past performance, we're not getting any responses. And I understand that this may push them into responding, you know, but that just jams everybody up if we're saying, well, we can't proceed because we don't have a certification. The other thing is, it's like a pocket veto for a school district. You know, if they don't certify it, they're just holding up the development. So there's got to be a safety valve on that as well.
I was just about to ask, why not make it incumbent on the developer, who's the applicant, to acquire that from the school district and leverage their influence to get what they need?
Yeah. So it's not going to really affect funding. That's from the state, not from the county, for the most part. So, yeah.
I'd rather see our energies spent trying to be an advocate to try to get funding for them for everything that's being put in front of us.
Get that on the record.
The same thing would hold true for EMT and fire and medical services, that we would recommend that they also certify the adequacy of current dispatch services levels to accommodate anything generated by the proposed residential development. Next one, Jamie. Same thing related to transportation improvement districts and transportation level. The only thing that we've really added here is the last line that says, additionally, the county shall impose condition regarding phasing and timing of building permits concurrent with the completion of necessary road improvements. You've heard Joe and many others at SBC in the past when they've provided testimony on specific developments be concerned over this phasing and capacity issue, and we feel that this would be an opportunity to actually put that in your code so you could refer to that if necessary. Okay, next slide. Just a question on number 14, that the subdivision is compatible with other area land uses. Still not quite clear what you would be compatible to, and alternative language would be to just say that it's complementary to the future land use map. Okay, next one. I was very pleased to see these additions put in the 99.9, and wasn't sure of how it took place until Mr. Robertson mentioned that this was in cluster division subdivision regulation and just got transferred over to here. This is something that the Sussex Planning or Sussex Preservation Coalition has been talking about. Certainly I have been talking about that all too often. That seems like with the developments that occur that the streets get put in, the stormwater ponds get put in, the roads get put in, the lots get put in, and then what gets left over is what becomes open space. Whether it has any natural resource values in it left or not is up for question. This actually sets up a system in place that looks at how to make these developments fit in well with the landscape. I would like to mention one point that was mentioned earlier, where Sussex Preservation Coalition was referred to as an anti-growth organization, and I'd like to dispute that and say that that is not the case whatsoever, that we are a smart growth organization. We have never been anti-growth. We just want to make things done better. And this is a great example of moving in that direction. The next slide. This is one element where we're talking about making a slight modification. And I mentioned where you removed the forest assessment in an earlier, the earlier version, I think it was criteria number 3. This is going in the right direction, but the way it's currently worded is that land should be preserved are identified first. Well, how do you identify the lands that are preserved first if you haven't done any mapping? So you're saying, let's identify the areas that we want to map. My thought is, and the SBC thought is, why don't we map the entire parcel? So we're suggesting that the entire parcel shall be mapped and an assessment of worthy areas worthy of preservation should be including wetlands, woodland areas, waterways, and so on. So instead of first saying, well, this is the area that we think land should be preserved, let's map that, I think that the county should take a step back and say, let's map the entire parcel and do a resource mapping of the entire parcel. And then from that, you can identify those areas and through an assessment, those areas that demand conservation and preservation. Just as an example, as a forester, not all forests are equal. Some forests are really valuable and beneficial. They provide wildlife habitat, water features, and whatever. Other acres of forest are, you know, just kind of common. And so you want to preserve the good pieces and maybe not fall on your sword on some of the other pieces. So you map the entire parcel, you do an assessment of those areas that you want to preserve, and you kind of may perhaps come up with a ranking process, and then you go about doing the other steps of considering the development.
So it's a public service announcement on that. Stay tuned, okay. Because the Forest Preservation Ordinance is coming out next. I know we talked about that at the last county council meeting, and it's going to be rolled out on the 14th. We're working with the state forester on that, and to your point, one of the requirements of that is going to be of the ordinance is a forest stand delineation, which is a defined term that we've worked on in conjunction with the state forester, which will do that sort of whole site mapping that you're talking about.
And SPCC has been in consultation with Kyle Hoyt, the Delaware state forester, so we've been involved in providing him some of our thoughts on this as well. I guess, next slide. So the only other thing is about this is we have some questions on how the sequence and process was following the identification and mapping, and then there's no mention of areas to be preserved or out of bounds, merely that they be considered and minimized for impact, which is, once again, not very clear on. So we go to this process, we map the entire parcel, we do an assessment of those natural resources, and then we try to work around that. But the way the language is, it's hard to know that they are being considered, are those needs being met? And I think that's it on 99.9. Yep.
So you'd be wanting something like only 10% can be impacted, or are you looking for that level of specificity, or are you, how are you?
Well, I guess I think at this point, with the Sussex Preservation Coalition would like to defer that until we see what the Forest Preservation Street, Ordinance is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can't help yourself, can you?
Thank you, everyone. Now I will not be going line by line. Again, John Horner, Homeowners Association. I'm not going to go line by line. Our comments largely cover the issues. The main issue with Ordinance 999C has been something that, frankly, we agree on with the Sussex Preservation Coalition, which is there's a complete lack of clarity, and there's standards that are totally inconsistent. When you say things like minimize stormwater runoff, but we have a code that specifically we have to conform to, it creates a situation where we comply with one standard, but one could argue we don't comply with another. And then the public gets up here and they say, hey, I don't think that they're minimizing stormwater. They could do this, and this would minimize stormwater more, and maybe that might meet the technical issue under 999, but we're sitting here saying we've got a code that we have to follow, and it's that inconsistency. So that's where we just want consistency. We want cross-references to code, and our letter outlines all of those things. I do want to address some of the previous comments, of course, not probably surprising nobody here. Smart growth. Absolutely, we need smart growth. That's the whole premise of the Land Use Reform Working Group. I find it hard to say they're a smart growth organization when can't think of a single project they've ever supported. And beyond that, a lot of the language that they just advocated for wouldn't be smart growth. It would stop all growth dead in its tracks. If you say we have to have all this infrastructure in place before a project can move forward, the answer is it won't happen. Zero. That's not smart growth. That is zero growth. That is everything is dead. And ultimately, the fundamental flaw in that logic and rationale is all of the things that they say we need the infrastructure from, all of that is going to be funded by future development. We know the school impact fees are coming. The state legislature passed it last year. Council's planning on acting on it. Home Builders Association is supporting it. It's happening. It's coming. Fire impact fees, building permits fund those. right? I mean, so all of these things that we're saying we need more of, roads, how are they funded? We have a funding issue with roads. Hopefully the state's going to address that and look for some legislation, maybe for a statewide impact fee coming from the legislature this year. My point, though, is if you put a standard out there that says, yeah, chicken and egg problem, which I think we all recognize, you say we're going to put in this that you can't have anything before the infrastructure's here, nothing's going to get built. The only way the infrastructure gets built is with funding from stuff being built. Nothing's being built. I think you guys get the issue. Ultimately, when it comes to school capacity, you're right, it would be a pocket veto for school districts. The legislature recognized this issue, for example, when they did the voluntary school assessments. So originally they passed voluntary school assessments. They're live in Newcastle County. Sussex had them pass. They sunsetted, and everybody, Kent County and Sussex, rather than do VSAs, they moved in favor of the building permit surcharge. One of the things that is built into the VSAs is if you have a VSA and if a builder is required to pay a fee, an impact fee for schools, you are not allowed to deny a project for a lack of school capacity. That's built into the VSAs, that concept, because that's how we're funding these schools. It's not candidly built into the Sussex or Kent program. It frankly should have been. But that same concept still applies. One other thing I will point out is when we look at the preservation in when we pull in the language that's in the cluster design subdivisions for the superior design, I think it's important to point out that a lot of the resources that we're talking about are already protected. Wetlands are already protected in our code. There's buffering, there's wetlands. Statewide wetlands protection is being introduced probably within the next 2 weeks for freshwater wetlands from Senator Hansen. That's coming as well for protection to those resources. Trees are going to be coming in apparently 2 weeks. So my point in saying that is the standards that are out there right now require us to identify those areas and then move forward. The language that they proposed would basically say, if you have these on your property is completely worthless from any sort of development potential. If I had a fully, the language that they proposed, if I had a fully wooded parcel, I have zero development potential on that. Now that is, that's a, frankly, that's a constitutional taking in many instances. So ultimately, I believe that is the sum of my comments. You can see in our letter sort of the line by line issues with some of the lack of specificity and things.
Thank you.
So I just brought up, wanted to bring up to point, so let's bring up the land use breakdown for Sussex County. So there's 625,966 acres in Sussex County. Agricultural and undevelopable land is 83% at 523,558 acres. 35,000 is preserved farmland. 2,428 is open space through subdivision approvals. Developed residential is 79,000 acres, which is 12.62%. Single family homes, multifamily homes, mobile home parks, the potential future growth, 72,238. Commercial and industrial is only 7,200 acres at 1.15%. Infrastructure and public use is 16,200 at 2.59%. That's utilities, recreation, and industrial lands. And here's the where I'm getting to. The investment level one district is only, I'm saying only, but in the scheme of things, it's 27,655 acres. Right, so let me go back to the agriculture and undeveloped lands. We have 523,558 acres at 83%. So a couple of things I would, I wish I could, and I felt like writing a book, a little handout on what it takes to be, to do development. Right, and the process you got to go through, and on a standard, you know, and I don't, you know, I'm just saying this because I know you guys, this is your part, but what a developer has to go through from start to finish, it's 18 to 24 months before you even, if you don't have a a specific part to it, like affordable housing. It's 18 to 24 months just to get on the docket. And then, and that's just to get your preliminary approval. Then you have to go through your agencies. And the amount of work we have to do to specify what SCD wants when it comes to stormwater management and DENREC is well beyond, I think, they're doing their job, you know. And that's a 6 to 8 month process. And DLDOT just announced that they're going to work on it, that, like, the field goal post is not going to keep moving, because it used to be it was at least a year to go through the DLDOT process, in the sense that you could submit something to DLDOT, which, I mean, how many entrances get built in a year, right? But every entrance is a custom entrance. So you would submit something in. They have 30 days to respond. You get the comments back. Then it takes 30 days for your engineer to put it back on. Goes through the process. And then there's, you know. So what I'm saying is, on average now, it's a 3-year process just to be a developer. And it's not just like you're, I'm not just making this stuff up. It's like, you know, it's the stormwater, DENREC, and SCD manage that. And what I'm, I guess, let me wrap this up in a sense, is I just don't want a more burdensome regulation where it's already been addressed, and maybe it's not in the Sussex County Code, but it's in the state code. And in the, you also have the EPA getting involved now, which when you do a pre-construction meeting with Sussex County, they're verbatim telling you what EPA is requiring now in different things. So that's why I'm speaking up about, and like, just to give you an example, because I know it happened to you guys before, is like somebody took pictures of a bald eagle being near a subdivision, and there was no bald eagles near that subdivision. And I know it's a shame that people have stooped to this level. And then another thing about school districts, Milford School Districts actually is, their enrollment has actually gone down, which I know it's hard to believe, but I verified it because I do a lot of business with the city of Milford and overall. And then, again, what he, Mr. Horner was saying about we just got a $2,500 fee for the funding schools, and we're talking about affordable housing. And then right now, on average, it's between $75,000 to $100,000 a lot to build a subdivision. But we're talking about affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Nope. Oh, okay.
Welcome.
Jill Hicks, Lewis, Delaware. I just want to point out that I see this as a golden opportunity for planning and zoning to get what you need to feel comfortable and have the confidence in the decisions that you need to make, whether it's to approve or deny, or even how many times have you looked at a site plan and said, this doesn't look right, or this doesn't look as it's being intended. And I'll speak a little bit about that when we get to open space. So I think it's a golden opportunity for commissioners to finally get in black and white what it is you need to make these decisions, because I know that there have been times when these things have come before you and you're just not comfortable with the decision that you're forced to make because you don't have the foundation or the legal, what am I trying to say, the foundation to stand on and not have it challenged. So I think back to 3 years ago, some of you may remember Kim Hoey Stevenson was a commissioner here, and she stepped down. And one of the reasons was she was frustrated
that she couldn't make the decisions she felt she needed to make, that she didn't have the protections in the code to do that. And I know she wrote recommendations, and 99C was one of them. So think back, maybe there's things in these 17, 18, 19 recommendations that don't cover things that have come before you, and you wish you had the ability with subdivision approval and denial to change. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Can I get a motion? I'll close the hearing on 2603.
I was going to say, Madam Chair, very quickly before we close the record, just to, I think Mr. Sinclair spoke to this point, and it was the cultural landscape requirement and the recommendation to revisit that wording as appropriate. If I can, to assist, that wording is very deliberate and very important, and that's because cultural assets and historical features can be very, very different in the field. And if I give you a small example that can be an important example, there can be historic features in development that are very significant, and there are some that can be present that need not necessarily be protected. And if you think about the example of a historic coin on a development, or a series of coins on a development, yes, they're historic features, and yes, they should be identified and important features, especially if they're known to the state in a development. But if you add the word protected and don't have the words as appropriate afterwards, it automatically means that that land is sterilized and preserved around that coin. Those coins cannot be explored by archaeologists because they're protected, and there may be certain types of historic features and artifacts that can be moved or relocated in a site. Coins are a common example of that. Otherwise, the land above them would never, ever be touched. So the words as appropriate are to allow the commission to consider specific historic artifacts. Now, obviously, they discover entire buildings
on each case, right? That makes sense.
Different. Yeah.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Whitehouse. Okay, close the, if there's nothing else. All right, I'll close the public record for Ordinance 2603.
All right. I move that we defer action on Ordinance 26-03.
I'll second.
Okay, the motion's been made and seconded to defer action on Ordinance 2603. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The motion carries.